From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is Evan Fowler.
Well, it's a great Tuesday afternoon, and it's going to be a great Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Glad to have you along. Thanks for listening. We've got some great information throughout the program today. Here's the outline. Hurricane Dorian has already hit North Barbados. 13,000 homes in the Bahamas may have been destroyed or severely damaged, and now it's making its way to the coast of Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia, where folks are being evacuated. In just a moment, I'll be talking with Edward Graham with Samaritan's Purse. Edward is Franklin Graham's son and therefore Billy Graham's grandson, and he'll tell us how you can be a part of helping folks with a donation or possibly volunteering your time. In our second segment, in response to the latest mass shooting in Midland, Odessa, Texas, it left 7 dead, 25 injured on Saturday. 2,500 Texans turned out for a Sunday night prayer vigil at the University of Texas Courtyard. I'll be talking with Midland Pastor Roy Smith of True Light Christian Fellowship, who was there. He doesn't believe the answer is gun control, but instead, the transformation of hearts by Jesus Christ. We'll be talking with Pastor Smith about that. At the bottom of the hour, I'll talk with South Dakota Republican State Senator Phil Jensen, the primary sponsor of a great law requiring all public schools in the state to display at least a 12-by-12-inch plaque of the national motto, In God We Trust. As South Dakota students return to school today, some schools went above and beyond, putting up huge stencils of the national motto that were 6 feet wide by 10 feet long. Great news. And at 42 past the hour in our final segment, liberals have ratcheted up their war on faith-based foster care and adoption services. They don't like that Christian staff don't want to place children in homes of homosexuals and want to force them to do so or shut them down permanently. It's time to turn the tables on this stuff, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Catholic Social Services of Philadelphia is challenging that policy all the way to the Supreme Court, and I'll be talking with Nick Reeves, an attorney with Beckett Law, about that. That's an important segment. You'll want to stay here. And if we have time, we'll take your calls in that last segment as well. Let's get started. According to a Reuters report, the slow-moving Hurricane Dorian, one of the most powerful Atlantic hurricanes on record, pounded Grand Bahama Island today and was forecast to come dangerously close to Florida's coast by the end of the day. Samaritan's Purse, you all know who they are. That's a great, great organization. They've packed their DC-8 aircraft full of emergency items to send to that area as soon as it's feasible. The people there are suffering after the islands were hit by deadly Hurricane Dorian. It's a Category 5 storm, packing sustained winds of 185 miles per hour with gusts up to 225 miles per hour. Joining me now, and we're so glad to have him on Washington Watch, Edward Graham of Samaritan's Purse. It was founded by his dad, Franklin Graham, and to show the love of Christ to people hit by natural disasters like this one. Edward, good to have you on Washington Watch today.
Well, thank you for having us, and y'all have been a great friend to Samaritan's Purse, so thank you very much.
Well, tell us, give us kind of an update. This thing is not moving very fast. Last report I heard, 1 mile per hour. So that means wherever it's sitting, it's causing a lot of damage. But what's the latest information you have on Dorian?
No, that's correct. It just pummeled the Grand Bahamas. We have some staff actually there that live there year-round. Some of our Operation Christmas Child staff lives there, so we've been praying for them. And the comms have gone down, and we've actually lost contact with them. But last week, they were just getting pummeled. You know, I couldn't imagine a Category 5 just sitting over you for 1 mile per hour as it just rolled. And you think it's going to be over quickly, and it's not. So definitely been praying for them. But the reports we're getting is a lot of the airfields are still underwater. The major airfields, we're going to need some of the larger ones, like at Freeport, in order to land a DC-8. And those reports are coming back that they hope the water will recede maybe tomorrow, but even when it does go down, what's the equipment look like? Are you able to land there? And those are some of the concerns. But the flooding and just the wind damage, my understanding, has been tremendous.
Well, I understand, you know, there have been, you know, any number of disasters, whether it's a hurricane or a tornado that, you know, you always hear about Samaritan's Purse responding, and you all are always ready for this kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about what, once you're able to get in there with this plane, that's kind of the first step, what kinds of aid are you going to be able to provide?
Yeah, well, in the DCA, we have a team known as the DART team, and it's a pretty incredible team of some staff and also volunteers that have been trained and prepared to do this, but it goes out and does disaster response. And with that, you have logisticians, you have medical personnel and specialists, people that are trained to go in and coordinate with the government, and also water specialists as well. And on this plane, on this specific one, we'll have materials for shelters, in order to getting shelters established. We'll also have water filters to go on people's taps, but then we also have special filters and systems that will go in and turn the salt water into fresh drinking water, and those are for more of the community level. And once we go in there and get these set up and establish comms and assess it, then we can also send the aircraft and come back for more resupplies of tarps and other shelter materials or whatever is needed. We also have large generators standing by as well that we can take down there in order to support them. But the biggest thing that prayer requests is that these airports will be able to get opened up so we can land these large aircraft. There's some smaller runways there that maybe get some smaller aircraft in, but our DC-8 aircraft is fairly large.
So Samaritan's Purse has been involved in this kind of work for a long time, and I'm guessing that over the years you have learned exactly the best kinds of things to have on hand for something like this. Tell me a little bit about what you've learned over the years, especially about a hurricane like this one.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, we've got a lot of talent on this team that the Lord's brought us over the years, and I'm not one of them. I'm fairly new. I came with this organization in December after leaving the military. But I've watched quickly this team assess, and they realize when you're on small islands like this, and water is always critical during a storm and it goes out, fresh drinking water is absolutely critical. And even the water sources where you might still be pumping fresh water has been contaminated because sewers overflow and they break and lines pop or they've been compromised. So the biggest thing is getting the ability to bring fresh drinking water and a safe drinking source to these people and to the churches. And so the churches can be a light. A lot of times we partner and always work through the church and our partners there. And if the church can provide safe drinking water and for their congregation and for their neighborhoods, it's a beacon of light and hope and to be able to come there. And then that's where we want to share the name of Jesus Christ and love on these people and allow the churches to be a light during times of trouble. And so that's what we learned. The plane will also have chaplains on board that will go there and start coordinating and praying, because all the churches there, they're affected. You're hurting and you're struggling as a pastor, as a congregation, your flock, your own house, your own family is suffering. So they need support. They need to be lifted up as well. You just can't come in there and expect them to be the church and do everything as they're continuing to struggle. So we'll have material and equipment for them as well.
Yeah, exactly. In some disasters you've been involved in, tornadoes, that sort of thing, there may be churches that are fully functional and operational in the area. In this case, where you've got an island that's been hit this hard, you're right.
That's right.
The churches need help as well. So a good thing that you're in there. What kind of coordination do you do, with FEMA or some of the other government agencies? Do you ever have any discussions or coordination with them?
Yeah, so when we're waiting here on the domestic response, we're heavily tied in with FEMA, and we've got a great relationship with their and people in other organizations, along with the state level, and then we're heavily tied in with the VOADs as well, and those are always important in order to be able to coordinate with other volunteer organizations, and there's also a group of faith-based members of volunteer organizations that get together and help coordinate and combine efforts and how to better attack the problem. But we are right now coordinating and being prepared here at the state and federal level for what happens here in the U.S. on the mainland. It's a little too early in order to plan. So we just ask our volunteers to stand by. They can always watch and look on the Samaritan's Purse webpage at samaritanspurse.org for updates. We also have an app, and you can go to the App Store and just search the SP Volunteer, and that's one of the best places. They get your information, and if you want to volunteer, I'd rather have your time in your services. The Lord will provide the funding, but I'd love for you to get on there and actually sign up. And so when it's time for the volunteers and the call to come out, we'll send you an actual alert on your app, and it'll let you know where to go. But that's where we'll work with the state and some of the local churches where the need's the greatest and the people are hurting, and that's where we'll go.
So we've got listeners right now who are probably thinking, gee, I'd like to help out. What kinds of backgrounds are you looking for in terms of volunteers, and from what parts of the country, or does it even matter?
It doesn't matter. You know, to volunteer, you're going to pay your own way to get there, but then we'll provide a place. We'll partner with the church. The way we work, if it's here in the U.S., we're not sending volunteers, and I want to clarify, we're not sending any volunteers down to the Bahamas, so we're not requesting that. But if we do send a call out here for the 48 for certain areas, we want people that just want to serve in the name of Jesus. It doesn't matter if you know how to run a chainsaw. We'll teach you how to run a chainsaw, and trust me, we'll get you comfortable. It doesn't matter, man, girl. We've got some unbelievable all-female chainsaw team that just loves getting after it. But we'll teach you how to tarp and how to tarp a roof. We'll teach you how to mud out a house. It doesn't matter. If you're just willing and want to love and go love on a homeowner who has lost everything, and just to be there to listen to them and also provide an opportunity for the Billy Graham chaplains to come in there and minister to this homeowner while you clean out their house or you pull limbs off their house and cut down trees in their yard. It's just a way to be able to share and share the love of Jesus Christ and to be the church during a time of darkness. So, again, the best way to go on there is to go to SamaritansPurse.org. You can look for ways there to volunteer and to sign up, or you can go to the App Store and do it. And that's one of me being a little bit more tech savvy. Some people don't feel comfortable with that, but that's one of the easiest and quickest ways to do it. And if you can't volunteer, you don't have the time, or you feel you're too far away, of course we'll take your donations. You know, after these storms, it's just not the immediate effects. A lot of times, you know, the storms move on and another storm's coming. We already see that in the news out in the Atlantic. Other storms are brewing.
Right.
And quickly get the attention. But these people are still struggling, hurting. They will in the Bahamas. They will here if the storm hits, you know, the U.S. We're still doing rebuilds all over the U.S., Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas. We're still building homes that were destroyed years ago and last year in the storms as well. So we're still there, and I'm a little worried about the rebuild program, especially in South Carolina and North Carolina, because we might have to pull some of our rebuild teams out due to evacuations.
So it's nice to hear that you just don't go in, you know, right at the beginning. You stick with it, and you continue to work, it sounds like. And you'd mentioned volunteers. Obviously, it doesn't make sense to send volunteers to an island out in the Bahamas.
Sure.
Normally, that's someplace where people vacation, but that's probably not going to be possible for a while. But you did talk about volunteers to help out in the other 48 states. The governors of coastal states obviously are taking this thing quite seriously. In fact, South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster ordered mandatory evacuations for parts of 8 coastal counties in his state effective yesterday, and more than 830,000 people were under evacuation orders in Charleston and other coastal communities in the state. So what are some of the things you're prepping for with respect to the 48 states, or especially the coastal cities?
You know, well, the biggest thing I would tell them, listen to your authorities and then get out. But for us, we've got semi-teams full of materials, tarp equipment, generators, power tools, chainsaws, 8 semis standing by with support trucks ready to go out and call and assist the local governments and the churches. Again, we'll go to the church and we'll support them and we'll work through them. That's where the volunteers will go.
That's great.
But all the equipment standing by and ready to go.
Edward Graham with Samaritan's Purse. Again, go to SamaritansPurse.org. You can find out many ways you can help financially and otherwise. SamaritansPurse.org or 1-800-528-1980. You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony today. Coming up next, in response to the latest mass shootings in Midland, Odessa, Texas, 2,500 Texans turned out for a prayer night vigil. We'll be back.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. end birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
You're listening to Washington Watch, Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network. I'm sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Late Saturday afternoon, a man in his 30s hijacked a U.S. Postal Service van in Midland, Odessa, Texas, and randomly shot and killed at least seven people, injuring another 25, including three police officers. The rampage began at 4 o'clock local time in the afternoon with a traffic stop where gunfire was exchanged with police. Thankfully, police rammed the gunman's car, shot him, and killed him. And that ended the problem. Joining me now to talk about this tragedy is Midland, Texas, Pastor Roy Smith of True Light Christian Fellowship. Pastor Smith, glad to have you on Washington Watch today.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Well, we're going to talk about some important things here, and one of the things I'm looking forward to hearing about is, your views on how some of these kinds of tragedies could be prevented. And the solution is not gun control. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But where were you when you first heard the reports about this shooting?
I was in my driveway at my home. I have a son that has served with the Midland Police Department for almost 20 years now. He's a sergeant there. And he gave us a head up on it, called my wife, and was letting her know to stay in wherever she was at, and for safety reasons, that they had a shooter loose.
Well, according to the Midland Reporter-Telegram, your local paper, I assume, the shooter went to his place of work, Journey Oilfield Services in Odessa, on Saturday morning, had an argument with his employer, and that led to his firing. Apparently, both he and the employer called the Odessa Police Department following that dispute. And I understand that this gunman was incoherently rambling during the call. Dispatchers couldn't even figure out what he was talking about. That's when this whole thing started. So what other information do you have about the incident, just to help our listeners who maybe don't know the details?
Well, that was the case. He did also he made the call. I don't know how incoherent he was. He just kept talking about the injustices of the world and just rambled along that line. And he was very upset about life and injustices. That seemed to be his main emphasis.
Okay, well, so then the Odessa Ministerial Association then organized a prayer vigil after this tragedy for Sunday night the next day, and you were expecting maybe 500 people would show up, but what happened?
it exploded. As you know, we thought it might here in the we are bred very pro-God and very Christian in this community of Midland and Odessa. So we expected a good crowd, maybe 500 to 800 people, but we ended up with near 3,000 people at this prayer vigil, which was a very beautiful sight.
All right. Now, you prayed during that event. Tell us what was on your heart. What did you pray for?
Well, during that event, I was not called on to pray. Our mayor prayed, but I was there at the event. We had prayed that morning in our worship service for this event. And I guess at a time like this, the thing that you pray for most is the coming together of a community. And being a pastor myself, I feel like I really know what the answer to our dilemma is and where the answer lies. And trying to get the heart of men to see that point becomes very trying in times like these, because grief and suffering can be overwhelming. So to bring the community together under the auspices of faith and prayer was a very, very dynamic thing by the Odessa Ministerial Alliance. And to be there and to be a part of that that embracing of God was really a refreshing thing. I haven't seen that happen a lot across our country, have a lot of visuals, but we were very intent on demonstrating God there.
Now, at the front end of this segment, Pastor, I did mention that we were going to talk about what can we do going forward to, I mean, you can't prevent all of these things. And, you
right.
know, you hear about these things. They happen every, you know, too frequently, obviously, way too frequently. And there's typically a call for gun control. What I'd like you to kind of get down. What are your thoughts about how we can improve this situation?
Well, for one thing, I think we need to leave the talk of gun control out of the equation, off of the table, because that gun control is not the problem. It's Christ or chaos. That's the problem. It's the heart of men. And how, if we move God, as we have in our culture, out of the marketplace, out of the discussion of the marketplace, then we remove our foundational premise as a Judeo-Christian nation. And once we do that, we invite in chaos. And we have no other alternative but to deal with this kind of thing time and time and time again. Because without Christ, the only thing you have left is chaos. With this banality and the meanness and the disintegrating personal behavior in our culture by people, it endangers communities all across our country. And Christianity, specifically, is the only answer to man's dilemmas. We have to get Christ back in the conversation.
That's right. And, you know, and talk about gun control tends to distract us from talking about the really important things that are actually causing these problems, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I agree. It's just trying to determine or figure out this problem and say that we need gun control is like saying if a drunk driver runs over a person or family and destroys and kills a family, we don't we punish the drunk driver. We don't take away cars. So it's ludicrous to think that taking away guns or that criminals will voluntarily turn in their guns. That's kind of way off thinking.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Lawbreakers are going to break the law. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's what they do. That's what they do for a living, so to speak.
And we see that time and time again. Well, so to speak, you're right. We see that time and time again when these things play out. This guy had failed 2 background checks. There's no way he should have had not only the gun that he had. He shouldn't have had a pistol. He shouldn't have had any kind of weapon. So the I can go out on the streets right now and get a gun in 20 minutes. It's not hard to get a gun because I know the criminals to go to get them. So asking a criminal to turn in his gun is like spitting in the wind. It's just going to come back and haunt you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's great what you've done. I think you're on to something. I think most of those listening know that it is the heart of man.
Absolutely.
That needs to change. It's the heart of man. And the work that you're doing in that community, you know, hopefully, you know, you can snag some of these people who are having the kinds of turmoil in their lives and chaos, as you said, and reach them with the love of Christ. So, Pastor, thank you for the work that you do. Keep up that great work, all right?
Likewise,
we're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony today. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about something that's kind of related to what we just talked about. It's a new law in South Dakota public schools that requires them to display our national motto, In God We Trust. I'll talk with Republican State Senator Phil Jensen. He was the primary sponsor of the bill, and we'll talk about that right after the break.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Hey, just wanted to ask you, if you listen to that last segment when we talked with a pastor from Odessa, Texas, Midland, Odessa, be praying for those folks. They've just gone through a really difficult time, and we can continue to pray that the Lord will reach people who have the kinds of chaos in their lives that cause these kinds of shootings and tragedies to take place. So just kind of keep that in mind. Well, we have a good news segment now, I'm glad to say. When students return to public schools across South Dakota this week, they should expect to see a new message on display, In God We Trust. A new state law that took effect this month requires all public schools in the state's 149 districts to paint, stencil, or otherwise prominently display that national motto. Joining me now about this legislative victory is South Dakota Republican State Senator Phil Jensen. He's the primary sponsor of the bill. Phil, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Well, great to be back. Thank you for having me.
So how in the world did you get this thing passed? You know, in this crazy day and age that we have where everybody's pushing back and telling us that, you can't do things like this. You got it done. How'd you do it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a miracle because they took the shall out, that it shall be posted, and made it a may, which is, they may do it now, but they don't. And so I said, OK, well, we'll do this and I'll play along. And we got it over to the House side after we got it out of the Senate. And the House immediately put the word shall back in and made it a mandate.
Wow. So the Treasury Department, they have the motto says, In God We Trust. It first appeared on coins in 1864. A little history here for you. And then it was adopted as the country's official motto in 1956 when President Eisenhower signed that proposal into law. And then it appeared on paper money the following year, 57. What opposition did you experience through the course of getting this bill introduced and then voted on and then passed?
Well, of course, the ACLU came out against this. And
surprise.
And the reason, yeah, surprise, surprise. But the reason I don't think they're going to pursue a lawsuit on this because it's already passed the Supreme Court. It's passed the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and it's constitutional.
So the people that come at you and say, well, you know, you're favoring Christianity over, let's say, you know, Hinduism or Buddhism or Islam, how do you what's the argument? I mean, that's something that we need to understand.
Well, unfortunately, our students aren't taught American history like I was taught, like you were taught, probably. You know, there's a real void of accurate history on how our country was founded and upon what principles. And it was Judeo-Christian principles that founded this country. And that's why we've prospered like we have.
That's right. Well, you probably didn't hear the previous segment. I was talking to a pastor in Midland, Odessa, Texas, about this tragic shooting that occurred over the weekend. And we were talking about the fact that one of the key reasons that these things keep happening is not because of guns or lack of gun control laws. It's because of the heart of men and women, primarily men, who commit these tragedies. And I think a lot of it is, I mean, what was it? Back in 1962, the Bible was taken out of schools and the Word of God was, you know, was in many cases the basis for the things that our kids learned. So what you're doing here, I think, may actually save some lives, if you get my connection.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we are in an epic culture war right now, and our Judeo-Christian heritage is under attack at every level. That's why it's not a time to be sitting on the sidelines and cheering on those brave souls that dare to stand up and fight. Everyone's got to be involved, Evan.
That's right. Hey, I want to give a shout out to our Rapid City, South Dakota listeners. We built a station, a couple of years ago, and we love our Rapid City listeners. And tell us about what their schools they have done in terms of stenciling the motto on the walls of their 23 schools.
Well, I'll tell you, it is so exciting. I would have never dreamed that they would have made the motto 10 feet long and a foot high. I mean, in all 23 public schools in the Rapid City area district, it just blew my socks off, basically. And one parent was telling me, she said, it's essential to understanding who we are as a country that we have this posted like this.
Are there any concerns that, like the ACLU or the Freedom From Religion Foundation or any of those other organizations might come in and challenge this in court?
Well, our attorney general has already stated that he will fight to defend this bill. And furthermore, the National Prayer Caucus Foundation has said, and I read this on the Senate floor, a statement from them saying that they would come to our defense pro bono to defend this.
That's fantastic. Well, good for the Attorney General. Let's keep him in office. That's wonderful. So there was an alternative version. You mentioned it just a minute ago. We don't have too much time to get into that. But what were they trying to do? How else were they trying to alter it briefly?
What they were trying to do is simply say, in Buddha we trust, in ourselves we trust, in science we trust. It was just a bunch of leftist gobbledygook, and the school board didn't pay any attention to it.
Good, because that's nuts. That's silly. Well, Senator Phil Jensen from the state of South Dakota, congratulations on this tremendous victory. Thank you for introducing it. Maybe it'll spread across the country. That'll be great. Well, you're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, liberals have ratcheted up their war on faith-based foster care and adoption services. I'll talk with Nick Reeves, an attorney with Beckett Law, who's helping out with that situation in our last segment coming right up.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
You're back on the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony. Glad to be here today and glad you are listening. Our phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Listen in. If you want to join in, we'll try to take your calls a little bit later in this segment. Well, liberals have ratcheted up their war on faith-based foster care and adoption services. Conservatives are not taking the assault on religious liberty lying down, and it's about time. This week, at least 10 states and 44 members of Congress filed briefs urging the Supreme Court to hear Fulton versus City of Philadelphia. It's a case with two foster mothers who brought a case against the City of Philadelphia. The suit challenges the city's discriminatory policies that keep faith-based foster agencies, such as Catholic Social Services, which does not believe that children should be placed for foster care or adoption in homosexual households, from placing children in foster care. Joining me now is Nick Reeves, an attorney with Beckett Law, who's representing Catholic Social Services. Nick, glad to have you along. Looking forward to hearing about this.
Thanks, Evan. Happy to be here.
All right. Well, tell us, first of all, about what's the case all about here?
Sure. Yes. So this case is about discriminatory actions, like you mentioned, by the City of Philadelphia. So the city is currently in a foster care crisis. In about March of 2018, the city said that they need 300 new foster families to care for kids in need. But just a few days later, the city turned around and said that they're going to close down Catholic Social Services, and it's one of the most effective agencies in the city, just because they disagree with their religious beliefs about marriage. So actually today, there are homes sitting empty, certified by Catholic Social Services, that could be caring for kids in need.
Well, Philadelphia is not the only place this has happened, right? I mean, I've heard about particularly Catholic foster agencies and similar kinds of organizations that are Christian-based, basically being told that they cannot operate in some cities. How widespread is this problem?
That's exactly right. And I think, the reason you see so many lawmakers and states getting behind the Fulton petition is because it is a national issue. Beckett alone has multiple cases. We have another case in Michigan on this issue. There's also a case in South Carolina. There is a case in Texas. And then there are somewhat similar issues arising in other jurisdictions as well, but not quite the exact same issue.
You know what seems just crazy to me is that these Christian-based foster care organizations are probably the most effective. They've been doing it the longest, and I think how long has Catholic Social Services been operating in Philly?
They've been around for over 100 years.
That's what I thought. So, they have a ton of experience. They have a wonderful heart. It's Christian-based, and the only problem here is that they believe is that marriage is – and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to state what I understand the situation is here and elsewhere in the country. But they state – they understand that marriage is between a man and a woman. That's it. There are no other – things that you can call marriage, and that's why the city of Philadelphia is opposing them and telling them, we're not going to refer anybody to you. Am I right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And to clarify, Catholic Social Services serves anybody in need. They won't turn away people who come to their homeless shelter or kids who need foster care. They serve everybody. The one thing they can't do is endorse and certify a relationship that's inconsistent with their religious beliefs. And all that means is that they can't provide the home study, which is basically kind of the background and the paperwork for a foster parent who wants to care for a kid in need. But because there are over, I think now the count is 30 or 40 different agencies across the city of Philadelphia that provide the same services, there's really no barrier for people who need or people who want to help kids in need. So this really is a solution in search of a problem. There's no evidence that the city has put on that anyone has been deterred or prevented from caring for a kid in need because of Catholics' religious beliefs. And, the point you were making before is a really good one as well. Some people actually choose to foster and adopt specifically because they share Catholics' religious beliefs and want to work with an agency that they know can support them.
Yeah, and I think what you were saying there is that if there is a same-sex couple that wants to adopt, there are agencies in Philadelphia that will do that. Now, personally, and I think there's not enough data yet, but I don't think it's wise to put a child in a situation like that, just plain and simple. But isn't that the case that they, if they really wanted to do that, there are places where they can go to get that, right?
That's exactly right. Yes, the city hasn't said otherwise, and there are actually some agencies that specialize in serving the LGBTQ population, and the city has supported those agencies, but yet they're trying to close down agencies like Catholic.
Okay, so who is it in the Philadelphia government who are saying, oh, I'm sorry, Catholic Social Services, because you believe this way, we're not going to work with you. Who are the perpetrators here?
It's unfortunately permeated a lot of the city government. The city council passed a resolution that basically said that religious liberty was a guise for discrimination. The mayor had numerous tweets about the archdiocese and saying, mean things about the Archbishop of Philadelphia. And during some of the testimony we had in this case, the director of their child welfare services program specifically talked about only investigating religious agencies for their compliance with this law and kind of additional evidence that they were being specifically targeted for enforcement. So I think it's, been multiple different facets of the government.
Yeah, and it's this ridiculous, this cowering that is happening all over the place. It's not only in government, it's in businesses and elsewhere. It's kind of like you've heard the expression tail wagging the dog. This is a very stubby short tail wagging an entire dog. The homosexual contingent in this country is very small, but they certainly have they're punching at a much higher weight classification than they're in. It seems. It's ridiculous that we're letting a small group, a very powerful, loud group, control these kinds of things. And again, there's an awful lot of fear. Is that what you're seeing?
I think there is a lot of fear in the agencies. We've met with other clients across the country, and they're just kind of concerned about the future of this important ministry. There are, I don't know the exact numbers, but thousands of kids across the country who are in the care of agencies like Catholic Social Services. And these agencies are particularly good at serving those who are most in need, like children with disabilities and sibling groups who need to be placed together to keep the family in one home. There was a study that came out, I think, 2 years ago, which showed that 45% of adoptions from Catholic charities were of children with disabilities. And you don't have those numbers in the secular agencies. So they really fill a unique role, and closing them down would do disproportionate harm to those most in need.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that you kind of nuance it, and you kind of talk about the particulars nicely, and I appreciate that. And, the city is cutting off their nose to spite their face, I think, when they do this kind of foolishness. When you prevent an organization that's been doing this for years and years, and as you say, they're taking care of, in many cases, special needs kids who are not necessarily in some of these other organizations. Well, what is the need in Philadelphia specifically? How many kids are in the foster care system, and how many homes are needed right now?
Mm-hmm. There are about 6,000 children in foster care in Philadelphia. Basically the way it works is they try to find homes for all the kids. When they can't find a foster home, which is the best place for a kid for temporary placement, the child has to be placed in a group home, which is a suboptimal placement, or they could end up in institutional care, which is kind of like even worse than a group home. It's maybe like an orphanage or something like that. Kind of a more modern version. And the city of Philadelphia today is still looking for about 300 new foster homes, because there could be kids who are in these group homes or institutional care who could be moved to an individual foster home where they would get more love and attention and support. And even the city has recognized that those are better placements. So the city is keeping kids out of these foster homes that are available today and that are certified by Catholic Social Services because they don't like those religious beliefs.
Yeah, I'm going to just say, and you silly people in Philadelphia government, come on, knock this off. Let's stop being silly here. The phone number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And I'm talking with Nick Reeves. He's an attorney with Beckett Law, representing a couple of very nice ladies. Tell us about Sharon L. Fulton. She's one of the Catholic Social Services foster moms.
Yeah, Sharon L. is an incredible woman. She's fostered over 40 kids in 25 years working with Catholic Social Services. And she, along with the other mothers who've been the plaintiffs in this case, have testified that they couldn't do the work they're doing to care for kids in need without Catholic Social Services. Tony is another one of our amazing plaintiffs, and she was a social worker for a while and then fostered, and now she's adopted two kids, all with the help of Catholic Social Services. And, she said she'd be lost without their support. They have great social workers. They have institutional knowledge. And they're able to use private donations to supplement the money that comes in from the federal government and from the state that goes to these foster parents to help them get even more services and better care than they would have otherwise.
So you've got 44 members of Congress. What have they told the Supreme Court?
So these members of Congress have said that it's important to have all hands on deck to care for kids in need. It's really a nationwide crisis. Some of this is actually being driven by the opioid crisis as well. We talk to our clients, and a lot of them say that the biggest reason kids are pulled out of the home, I guess the two biggest reasons, are neglect and drug abuse by the parents. So, we have, at this time, we have an increasing need for foster care and for great foster parents, but some states are saying we no longer want the help of Catholic or other Christian foster agencies, and that's really hurting kids most in need. And like you were saying, that's putting politics before the needs of real children.
Yeah. Well, when did Beckett get involved in this? And are these the kinds of cases that you typically take on?
Beckett got involved in late 2017, I want to say, first in Michigan and then in Philadelphia. Beckett takes on a wide variety of religious liberty cases, And we believe that religious liberty protects the rights of all individuals to worship and to practice their faith. So I would say this is, you know, representative of the work we do, but it's not the only type of work we do.
Sure. So apparently you asked for a preliminary injunction to stop Philadelphia's discriminatory policy and let Catholic Social Services place children with families. What was the response to that?
Right. So we had asked the courts in Philadelphia to just allow us to keep the status quo, to continue doing what we're doing while this case moves forward. Both of the courts in Philadelphia told us no. They said we weren't able to meet the legal standard that they thought applied in this case. So we are now asking the Supreme Court to take another look because we think the lower courts applied the law incorrectly. And we think that actually the standard they applied is the wrong standard, too. So we're optimistic the Supreme Court will be interested in this case. The Chief Justice has written about Catholic foster care and adoption agencies in one of his dissents before, and we previously filed an unusual motion with the Supreme Court asking for a brief stay. And even though it was denied, three justices at the time, it was Justices Alito, I believe it was Gorsuch, and Justice Thomas, all three of them said we had a clear right to relief on the merits. So we think there are a lot of good signs suggesting the court might be interested in this case.
So the two courts, you had the district court and then the Third Circuit, both of which denied you. Do you think it was because of the, am I correct in that, first of all?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So do you think it had anything to do with the particular leanings of the judges, or, without getting too far into the legal weeds here, what happened there?
I think it's hard to know. I think the case law in the Third Circuit, wasn't great for us. I think one of the arguments we make in our cert petition is that there's some bad precedent that these courts have relied on to rule against us, and we think that only the Supreme Court can fix that. So we think both the nationwide implications of the case, how this will affect agencies across the country caring for kids, and how there's a need to fix some bad precedent out there, some bad previous cases that said, neutral law, you don't need to give an accommodation to a religious organization if you apply neutral law. We think that the Supreme Court can fix that, and that's why we've asked them for this relief.
So this could be the outcome of this case could really have a great impact across the country, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. It would bring a lot of certainty to the future of these agencies. Talking to our clients, they've had staff who've left and staff who are concerned about the future of their jobs. We've had families who've chosen not to foster and adopt or chosen even to look elsewhere because they're concerned about the future of these agencies. And that just hurts kids in need and hurts the families who could have been serving through these agencies but chose not to. So it would certainly have nationwide implications for the foster care system. And like I was saying before, I think it would have broader implications if the court were to reconsider some of that bad precedent I mentioned.
Well, let's hope they do. And so just briefly then, do you think there's a chance that you might get some other amicus briefs from other states and other members of Congress?
We're certainly hopeful that if this case continues and if the court grants cert, we'll get a lot more support and more amicus briefs, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, very good. Thanks so much for the work you're doing. Nick Reeves, an attorney with Beckett Law, working on this great case. Again, thank you for the work that you're doing. We'll hope that you all prevail in the Supreme Court and we can get this straightened out. Well, you've been listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. Thanks for listening today. Great to have you along.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.